Hey, it's Daryl C. Murphy, and I just want to talk to you real quick. The Common is produced at WBUR in Boston. We're public media. We don't have paywalls, which means we don't ask you to pay to see our work. We say, here's some powerful stories for free. And then, if some of those stories you read or listen to are important to you, and you talk about it with your friends and family, and you even see the world a little differently, then we ask you to support it, because we want to continue making work that is meaningful to you. And right now, I want to let you know what's happening at WBUR. Our radio shows, our podcasts are getting some of the biggest audiences we've ever had. Our journalism is winning awards, reaching new and more diverse audiences. And you are a big part of that. Our journalism has never been stronger, but the business has never been harder. We've had a big loss of sponsorship dollars, like a lot of media companies have in recent years. But one thing we've always been pretty good at is getting support from our listeners to make the things they love. So we're asking right now, in a crucial moment for WBUR, can you help us get through this by joining other listeners in supporting WBUR? We need your help to keep making the podcast you're listening to right now, along with everything else that comes from WBUR. Your help would mean a lot to me and to all of my colleagues. So please, head to our website, WBUR.org. Thanks.
WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common. Deb Becker, how are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Glad to be talking with you. So, Deb, this year will mark 10 years since the tragic bombings that occurred at the Boston Marathon. There, three people died and dozens more were injured, but the trauma did not stop there. So, as runners are set to hit the road on Monday for this year's marathon, tell us about the mental health impacts of that day.
Right. The mental health effects are just so widespread. And I think that we're really still getting a handle on it. We don't know how many people may have been traumatized by what they witnessed or what their loved ones witnessed. And it wasn't only the bombings, right, Daryl? It was the manhunt after. The city was in lockdown, the shootout in Watertown. It was a really tough time for the city and for a lot of people. And so, you know, obviously there were mental health effects from this difficult experience. And I found a woman who was very open about her mental health struggles and what happened to her. She was sitting in the bleachers at the finish line in 2013. Her name is Manya Chelinsky. She's 57 years old. She still lives in Boston. And she describes what happened when the first bomb detonated. Let's listen.
I was standing there looking, I think, directly ahead. And a bomb exploded across the street from me. I don't know how I knew, but I knew it was a bomb. And I was frozen in place.
So she's sitting there, you know, having a fun day with her friends, watching the race. This bomb goes off. There's smoke everywhere. She's in the bleachers. And then another bomb goes off. She tries to make her way out. She finds her friends, and they all just stand there when they get to near the Back Bay train station. And they look at each other. They don't know what just happened. How do they make sense of this, right?
Yeah, that's
and
shocking.
So,
yeah.
Right. They all just decide they'll go home. She goes home. She's watching and reading media to figure out what just happened at the finish line. And she says, well, the next day, I guess I go to work. And she goes to work the next day, and she realizes something's wrong when she takes a conference call. This is what happened.
In the middle of the call, I smelled the bomb, and I reacted the way that I reacted the day before, which was I was frozen in place. Something in my brain clicked. Okay, I'm looking outside the door of my office. There is no smoke. I don't think it's happening again.
Wow.
But see, I know, right? So the thing was, Daryl, she was smelling explosives. She was sometimes actually seeing destruction that hadn't even happened. And she didn't know how to process all of this. And she said she was having trouble sleeping. She was having nightmares. It was really a difficult time for her, and she didn't understand it. So she went to get help. And she went to a therapist. She went to a trauma counselor. It took her a while to figure out, why am I reacting like this? And eventually she was diagnosed with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder.
We often hear those letters thrown around, PTSD. But as a reminder to folks, what exactly is it? What is post-traumatic stress disorder?
Basically, to be very simple about it, and I don't want to appear flip, but the brain kind of gets stuck in danger mode, really, is what happens. I asked some folks about this, like, why is PTSD a psychological effect from the marathon bombings? And it's depression, anxiety, PTSD. Those are the three common psychological effects after any mass traumatic event. And I spoke with Dr. Alicia Moreland Capuia. She's with the Trauma-Informed Systems Change Institute at McLean Hospital. And she basically said, you know, fear in our brains, or fear created by our bodies, however you want to describe it, is kind of a survival mechanism, right? And then the brain says, oh, that's a frightening memory. Let's not do that again. But when it's really a sudden traumatic event, the brain kind of gets stuck in this mode. Let's listen to what she said.
We're not designed to be under chronic stages of stress and or fear. When it doesn't turn off and it starts to get in the way of our ability to function and to do everyday life, that's when we're starting to kind of move or brush up against the edges of a post-traumatic, a more chronic process that would really benefit from some additional expert support.
And that's what Monya Chelinsky did. She went and got expert support. There's something called EDMR, which is a therapy for trauma that uses eye movements and memory to be able to sort of get yourself past this danger mode so it isn't interfering with your daily life.
Is there any idea or estimate of how many people may be suffering from PTSD due to the marathon bombings? And if so, what kind of effect has that had on the city?
I don't think anyone knows exact numbers, right? There's no sort of central reporting repository or anything of how you might keep track of those folks, because many people just were told to go to their primary care providers and or private clinics. So there's no record of how many people actually suffered some of these mental health issues after the Boston Marathon bombings. But there was a report done by federal health officials that estimated that for every mass tragedy, for every person directly affected and physically hurt, there could be between 4 and 50 people mentally and emotionally affected by that same mass tragedy. So there are many more people who are indirectly affected, even though when we often talk about these disasters, we talk about the people killed and hurt physically. And sometimes it takes weeks for people to even figure out that they're having this emotional reaction that can be tied to this traumatic event. And I spoke with Sandro Galea, who's the dean of the Boston University School of Public Health, and he said it often does take time before post-traumatic stress disorder is officially diagnosed. And it's unclear, but the mental health ramifications of mass casualties are huge. And I think a lot of people are worried about how the commemorations of the 10 years might trigger or surface some difficult emotions for people.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Deb, what role does the internet and social media play in all of this? Because we're talking about this as, you know, 10 years have passed, right? Basically, a lot has changed in technology. We have a lot more access to information. How does all of that come into play when it comes to PTSD and dealing with the aftershock of that day?
Right, right. Well, what's interesting about the Boston Marathon bombings, according to researchers I spoke with, is that the bombings were really the first major attack in the U.S. where social media was widely used and graphic images were put all over social media and disseminated without editorial oversight. So people were exposed to some gruesome scenes from the finish line over and over again. And I spoke with Roxanne Cohen-Silver, who's a professor at the University of California at Irvine, who actually studied this. And she studied how people who saw these graphic images online in Metro Boston, so they could feel that it was very real, this is their neighborhood, compared with people who saw the images and maybe lived outside of Boston, New York, or even the West Coast. And she found that regardless of where you lived, this incessant exposure to gruesome images of what was happening during a mass casualty really affected people's mental health. This is what she said.
We actually have seen a cycle in which people engage in a lot of media is associated with stress and anxiety and worry, which then they're sensitized and are sort of drawn to the next story. And that is a cycle from which it's very difficult to break.
So Cohen-Silver basically says you're getting this sort of response, this mental and physical response to seeing these images. You're experiencing this trauma and you're almost getting yourself caught up in finding out what happened next. And you continue to look for those images. And those people had very high rates of emotional distress. And she says on this 10-year mark, when a lot of people will be looking at this milestone, she hopes that people will stay away from graphic images and other things that might really cause some disturbing emotions to come forward.
Mm-hmm. What kind of suggestions do doctors and mental health professionals offer to people who might be struggling during this time?
They have a couple of suggestions, and we should say the city of Boston actually has some suggestions that it has posted on the city's website about what to do if you're having some difficult feelings. But I think the big thing is that many folks say recognize that what you're feeling is because of these commemorations, that you're reminded of difficult emotions and things are surfacing. You know, I spoke with BU professor Mark Miller, and he studied how local veterans were affected by the 2013 Boston Marathon bombings. And what he found were higher rates of mental distress from those veterans who were directly experiencing what was happening during the marathon bombings, which is to be expected. They were reminded of the war zone, right? So he said a lot of times, just like with veterans or anybody really, maybe they're slipping into bad habits. Maybe they're feeling very anxious. Maybe they're angry for no reason. You know, really reflect on why you might be experiencing difficult emotions. And don't be ashamed by it. Don't think, oh, come on, it's been 10 years. Suck it up. Get over it, right? Like, don't do that. Really reflect on it and think about, no, I am having a difficult time right now. I'm not going to be ashamed of this. I'm going to reach out for support from loved ones. I'm going to try to do something positive. Remember positive things that have happened in the 10 years since. I'm going to do something that makes me feel better. Maybe it's taking a walk. Maybe it's having an ice cream Sunday. Whatever it is, do something that makes me feel better. So they highly recommend doing that, making sure you have rest. But if these difficult emotions don't seem to subside and stick around for a long time and you find yourself slipping back into bad habits or whatever, then perhaps you seek some professional help to deal with them.
Got it. And you mentioned Manya. the woman you introduced us to earlier, she actually helped to get some federal legislation pushed through, right?
Yeah, that's right. She did. So she calls herself an accidental advocate, in part because she was angry about really not feeling supported after she went through what she went through at the finish line of the marathon bombings in 2013. So she worked with Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley and worked on this bill that, by the way, President Biden signed into law just this past December. And that bill expands federal mental health resources to areas that are declared emergencies. So there will be definitely more federal mental health resources now when there are tragedies like this in the future. And Chalinsky says that she's very motivated to continue this work, but the legislation is now in place.
Well, Deb, thank you so very much for this story and taking the time to talk with us on The Common. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
That's WBUR reporter Deb Becker. And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening to The Common. If you have any thoughts on this episode, hit us up on Instagram at WBURTheCommon or send us an email at thecommon@wbur.org. I'm Darryl C. Murphy, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.